Well, I guess it's the three of us tonight.
Well, that's
Okay.
okay. Well, let's talk about the big news today, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I contacted Wizards of the Coast and formally requested a representative to join us on one of our future podcasts to answer some questions. But for tonight, we'll do some speculating about the new D&D Essentials and the errata that came out today, which,
Yeah.
what timing? I mean, I was seriously like 40 minutes from leaving to play in my first game for a while. Like, this is the Tuesday game that I had started a few weeks ago with all the new players, and
Right.
I actually passed it off to a new DM, and so I played with them today, and I played a wizard who, in fact, had magic missile. So I decided, I'd wait for the update, get the update, and take the new Never Miss magic missile with me.
Tell me that you at one point in the game did cast it at the darkness.
Oh man, I cast it in every direction that wasn't the enemy, and I still hit. That's the best part about it.
That's awesome.
I at one point I full on just turned my guy around, and I was like, okay, I close my eyes, I point in the opposite direction, and then I fire. And I'm like, hey, look, I hit. It was great. And I had Wizard's Fury was one of my daily powers. And so I let that fly. And I don't know if you know what Wizard's Fury is, but that's the one that lets you cast Magic Missile as a minor action every round. And
Oh,
so
nice. Yeah.
I was dropping, Scorching Burst, Magic Missile, Burning Hands, Magic Missile. Everything was
Rinse
just
and repeat, yeah.
it was great. So
Oh my gosh.
yeah. And
That is pretty cool.
we fought a Kraken today, so it was pretty fun. Yeah.
Released. I just saw that the other day.
The
My
new
wife and I
one?
went out. Yeah, went out and saw Clash of the Titans. Of course, we love the classic old one, the Harry Hamlin and all this stuff,
Oh yeah.
and Ray Harryhausen with the monsters and everything. And this was a nice. It was a nice retelling. I don't think it totally screwed it up. It hit all the high points, but it sort of made it its own movie, you know.
Yeah, I haven't
So.
seen it. I haven't seen it yet. Such mixed reviews. I've been waiting till it comes out on Netflix, so.
Oh well, don't get. You're not going to get Oscar quality performances here on this,
Yeah.
but but it wasn't too bad. No. But yeah, about the errata, we were I was looking at that and I was like going especially with the magic missile thing, I totally jumped back to WoW and it was like, yeah, they did this with arcane missiles like nine updates in a row or something at
Yeah.
one and they just could not get it straightened out. So, but yeah, I just thought it was kind of funny. I didn't see anything at least in the errata that was totally breaking or anything. I just thought it's a nice. It's like, okay, well, I guess I'd better publish these for my game group, or they're gonna bitch and moan about
Well,
it.
dispel magic moving from a daily down to an encounter power was pretty awesome too. I mean, it's an
I
encounter
think.
utility now, so.
Yeah, and I think that's a good idea because I think you're going to have situations. I love to see mages go up against other mages and like canceling effects and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think it's a cool thing to do, so.
Yeah. I actually agree that that's not a terrible idea, just because it's one of those dailies that I'm guessing the lowest percentage of wizards picked that as their daily because, it was a one and done, bam, you dispel a conjuration, no damage, no extra effect, no help to the group other than the fact that you got rid of a wall or a conjuration. So I think that was well needed.
I was glad they
Tracy,
put the.
your thoughts?
I was just glad they put the new Monster Manual 3 updated stats in there for attacks by level and stuff like that.
Yeah, that'll help with converting all the Monster Manual 1 and 2 stuff over, but
I'm hoping they'll update Monster Builder with it.
yeah, that's what we're
Yeah.
all hoping for.
Yeah.
Which, the lack of Monster Builder update today would give me hope that, it's a pretty big project, so they're just holding off from the update and getting it all done.
That's what I'm hoping too. So.
Sadly, it means that, your hardcover version of the Monster Manual 1 is now completely worthless.
Well, I don't know if I'd say
Oh, you know.
besides pretty pictures.
and story and other stuff too.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to go out and buy a second copy, probably. But, I mean, it depends on how long the game runs. The game runs another 5 years, and they'll probably release a, you know, another version of it. Not version of the rules, but another, you know, another printing, you know, second printing, if you will, or whatever. But
yeah, there's been a lot of speculation on some of the blogs. I think Geek Ken's blog was kind of speculating that they were wrapping up to do a kind of a reprint of the rules containing a little bit of the essential line stuff, you know, and a lot of the errata. So, but I think the essential line versus more than just the errata is what's got a lot of people up in arms today.
Yeah, I saw some of that. I mean, I also read the comment from the guy from Wizards. I think it was Chris Sims that had linked that in Twitter. And I think several other people after him did as well. And it was basically saying, look, guys, this is parallel. I mean, you might have a new rogue. You might have an Essentials rogue running right alongside a dodgy rogue or whatever it's called. But in other words, think of it as another build.
Right.
And that, to me, I'm okay with that. It's a little strange, but I can think of it as another build, then I can treat it that way with my players, and I treat them equally, and it won't be any problem. So, of course, I haven't seen the actual rules yet, so I'm going to trust them at this point that there's nothing overbalancing with, say, for example, dropping dailies for wizards and giving them encounters that can damage on a miss, but and whatever other effects that they might dump on players. But
I fear the creation of basically a second parallel game system, and suddenly it's just like, well, I play 4th edition. Well, which do you play? You know, do you play 4th edition basic or do you play 4th edition advanced?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Well, I've done that before. There is precedent for that, unfortunately.
Yeah, not that I was around for any of that action back in the day, but, you know, just knowing that it could easily split the pool of gamers into two different types. And as a DM, I don't want to have to deal with learning.
Right.
I guess that sounds lazy, but learning an entire new way of DMing. Now I've got half Essentials, half, you know, original 4th edition guys.
Well, on top of it, this is going to be for the DMs are going to have to learn some new mechanics just to bring new people on if they're going to push them towards this
right.
Red Box and Rules Compendium and stuff, which has me a little worried too. You know, somebody who's trying to get new players in, I don't like the PowerPoint system. I mean, I'm fine with my players having it in the game. I just don't want to have to deal with it at that level. And these are specifically for bringing new players in. So I'm just a little concerned and stuff. As you probably know.
Yeah. Well, I think anytime...
I think that's a valid point, yeah. I mean, go ahead, Thad. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, anytime something is this drastic of a departure or a change, you're always going to have a lot of DMs who, you know, like Tracy and I, are very concerned or worried, just because it's going to... We already put a lot of work into this game, and it, you know, we've kind of found... After a year or so, you find that balance. And
sure. Yeah,
now it seems like the balance may be tipped again and, you know, right back into the pool of trying to figure out how to make everything work again.
Well, now let me clarify something, though. When you're talking about PowerPoints, it's very much like they did with Psionics and the Player's Handbook 3, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so
and
you basically add...
Oh, it doesn't say for sure that that's how the system they're going for. They just said that, you know, they're trying to use some of the stuff they used in PHB 3 to create these new subclasses.
Okay. Well, I can see that we're with the I mean, I really think that you characters that use the PowerPoints, I mean, it is kind of ironic that while D&D Essentials is supposed to be a, quote, basic D&D or an introduction to D&D, unquote, using PowerPoints is a complicated system. It's much more difficult to manage a character with PowerPoints than it is without.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of looked at the three players' handbooks in release format and thought that they had done something wise in the way they did it, which was the first player's handbook had all of the very basic classes in it, you know, fighter, cleric, wizard, paladin. There wasn't too much bookkeeping to do with those classes. And then you get, you know, you get warden and druid and you get shaman in the next one. And that is, you're adding a little more to it. The complexity kind of goes up as you get into the Player's Handbook 2 characters. And then Player's Handbook 3 was, you know, you got your point buy system and your augment system. And then you get you get gear that also augments. So you're throwing, you know, your characters have to make the choice of up your power, up your gear. You're not dealing with the basic, at this level, get an extra encounter. At this level, get a daily. At this level, get an encounter. It's, you know, you get another augmentable at this level. So yeah, it really changed the complexity of the characters with that new Player's Handbook. And then suddenly, they're just like, okay, so now we're going to go back to the basics, and we're going to use our most complicated system that we've come up with yet, and call that the basics. And and using that system doesn't really introduce them to Dungeons & Dragons. Like, if the idea is to introduce them to Dungeons & Dragons as the basics and then move them into the full game, the point buy system isn't a major part of the game. It's really only those few classes from the Player Handbook 3, and so they're not really learning the full game.
Right.
I'm on line with that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes down to, they may not use the PowerPoint system as the mechanic. They may have done something else that is just totally awesome that I haven't thought of. You know, I'm totally willing to say that right now, but if it's the PowerPoint system, I don't know. I think it offers a lot of tactical, like, a lot of the people on Twitter who are responding to me were like, whoa, but it's so much better tactically. I have so many more options. And I'm like, yeah, but you've been playing for a while. Like, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. For new people, you're right. That's not necessarily going to be appropriate. Yeah.
Right. I played with, you know, four people today who had never played Dungeons & Dragons before until last week. And I will tell you, tactics were not a part of the game today. And I didn't, you know, I could have opened my mouth and been like, okay, guys, we need to focus fire. We need to concentrate on this guy. Now this guy's bloody. Let's get him, clean up some minions. You know, whatever the tactic I thought was appropriate, I could have been saying it. But that's just that I'd be playing their characters for them. New players don't care about tactics. Veterans do, which brings me to another point about the Essentials line.
To a point, I've been playing with guys for 10 years whose main tactic is surround and kill the bad guy. they're just not tactical geniuses, and they don't. And since they don't talk to each other out of game really that much, you don't have a whole bunch of, which is odd because a number of them are current or used to be WoW players. But a number they don't consider how their characters interact and how their powers can benefit each other. They've only got a little inkling. They do it sometimes, but it's not a constant thing. So tactics is not exactly an area where my particular set of players, anyway, are all that savvy. They have some basic rudimentary stuff, but they don't think about it real hard.
Right.
So, and they've been playing since, you know, 3.0.
So let me amend that statement then. You are far more likely to find tactic-driven players in the ranks of veterans than you are brand new players who are just learning how to roll dice and find their armor class on their sheet.
I would agree with that statement, yes.
Yeah. And it's funny because I'm actually pretty tactical. And so, like, yeah, on one hand, I like having more tactics available to me. But I also know that I'm not the average new person playing. And a lot of them are just trying to figure out, you know, what is this magic missile I hear so much about? Rather than...
And why do we cast it at the darkness?
Yeah. And Doritos and Mountain Dew and everything.
I put on my wizard's hat.
Well, I mean, I guess the consensus really just is we don't know enough about it. And I guess a lot of us spent a lot of time today knee-jerk reacting to the very limited amount of information that we got from the website.
Oh, but, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really nervous that I've been told for like months now, don't worry, when the essential lines come out, all the newbie stuff that you've been wanting is going to come out. And I'm really nervous it's not. And then I'm just been set up for disappointment. And that's not fair to them, but that's just how I'm feeling today.
Yeah.
When you say newbie stuff, Tracy, what do you mean exactly?
Well,
I'm not.
So the Player's Handbook, I remember filling out my first character sheet. I could not figure this darn thing out. I eventually found the character builder, but first I found an Excel spreadsheet, and that helped a little bit, but
okay.
I couldn't figure any of it out, where to put the numbers from the standard array, where those went, what a modifier was, anything like that. I also feel that I have more experience on the DM side, so, you know, I've been spending the last month really looking through the DMG and the DMG2 and trying to piece together the parts that are spread all over in order to make monsters and to really understand what's going on with my encounters, that I've been having to up encounter levels because I can't fit into our play style and our story the 3 to 5 encounters per day.
Okay.
So in order for it to be challenging for my players, I've had to up encounter levels, which isn't entirely fair to them either.
How many players do you have?
We have 5.
Okay, so you're playing with the standard set,
yeah,
if you will. So they're
right.
The recommended number, okay.
And then if you follow the battle templates, a lot of them have like +4 monsters in there, with like level +4, and that's really annoying for most groups. But there's no other guidance given anywhere for which monsters to put into your encounters and stuff like that. I've had to learn from everyone else.
See, now I've been going purely by XP. I don't give a whole lot of thought to the... I mean, yes, it says it's a good idea for better encounters to mix your various types and stuff. And I've done some of that. Maybe it's an intuitive fashion. And it could be just for the fact that I've been doing it long enough that certain monsters I know will behave certain ways, and that's how I, you know, run them. So I don't deal with the math that much. So I can imagine that would be, without any kind of clear guidelines as to what you're supposed to do, you know, first I do X, then I do Y. That would make it very difficult. I can see what you're talking about.
Yeah, actually, I've been reading the 3.5 DMG, and it gives a lot more explanation about what you're trying to go for when you create
right.
encounters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been able to backfill a lot of the knowledge.
Right.
And it turns out that a lot of it I had already guessed through my own experience over the past year. But
yeah.
I think there's a lot of people out there who are still, you know, nervous and scared and don't quite understand what they're supposed to do. And until we can get more people DMing and comfortable doing it, we're going to have a hard time having enough games for all the players who want to play.
Yeah. The desire for this newbie material is really valid. And just the idea that, you know, the amount of books and information that's out there right now is daunting for anyone who wants to just jump in. Tracy pointed out really correctly that throughout the first DMG and the second DMG and the player's handbook, the information you need to just put together a game and start running it, it's spread out thick between those 3 books. And so pulling it all together can take a while. And you have to be committed to do it. Whereas, you know, what we're hoping for from the Essentials line is that it will introduce you to and walk you through the very basics of setting up a very basic game and allow you to start expounding on that and then begin adding information, you know, to the skill set that it's given you from the DMG and the DMG2 and the player's handbook.
Right. Well, I'm hoping the Essentials line, from what I've read about it, at least on the DM side, it's going to come as like a kit, you know, where you've got, you know, not only your actual book that shows you how to do stuff, but I mean, it's got the monster tokens and everything else like that built in with it as well. So quite frankly, when I first picked up Keep on the Shadowfell, I thought it had pretty much everything I needed to start a game. I mean, it had the basic starting guide, you know, and it had those basic player sets, and then it had a fairly comprehensive module that started with a very basic encounter and, you know, built from there. And it was like, oh, well, this is cool. You know, this is all I really need. But then again,
right.
I'm a fairly experienced DM, but as at least jumping into 4E, when I picked that up, a lot of the things became immediately apparent, and it was like, oh, well, that makes sense. And yeah, there were inconsistencies later on that I began as I got further into things. But at the beginning, it seemed like it was fairly complete. It would have been nice to have tokens. That's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, tokens are nice.
I mean, I use miniatures a lot, but it's like, you know, if the tokens are there, especially even as minions or something, you know.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is some groups are going to be happy playing adventures. Mine happened to not. One of the big things, we played Keep on the Shadowfell, and they hated it after a while, because they're not really dungeon crawl people. So, and I think I heard most games are more homebrew that people play at their tables. So I think that's where the lack of information really is like how to create your own encounters and your own monsters if you don't want to do the ones from the monster manual because your players all know them already and stuff like that, which I guess isn't quite fair to say that every new person is going to want to do, but I think it's the best part of playing D&D is that you can do that.
Right.
And the fact that it's so hard to learn for me and probably some other people makes it so much harder to really get into it.
I'm lucky that none of my players have the motivation to go out and read the information I'm using. I mean, they show up every month even though the information's out there and like, for example, my wife is in my game, and it's not like she's going over the module reading it, because, I mean, it's like going and telling someone about the movie before it, you know, it's spoilers. No one's interested in doing that. They're all mature enough that they're not going to get, there's no sense of, well, gee, if I know all this information, I can win, you know? So there's no, that kind of, yeah, my wife just, did you hear that? Did anyone hear that?
No,
she said, maybe we're just good at keeping secrets from you.
Nice.
And I said, well, and I'm saying, well, maybe that's true, but if that's the case, ignorance is bliss. So.
At least two of the guys in my group are DMs. So that kind of hurts it a little bit. And they just like keeping up with it, too. I know when I started, one of them offered to let me read the monster manual because they knew that I was interested in DMing already. And I was like, no, I can't do this because it's like cheating. I want to learn this as I play. I want to have that new experience where, you know, I don't know that such and such a thing can regenerate and I'm just going to get surprised by it because that's part of the fun. Yeah,
well, that lends itself to the exploration part of the game, which is for a lot of people huge, you know, discovering new things and learning about new creatures or new cities or new... And teaching new DMs how to set that up for their players, to bring new things in and to create a place for them to explore, I think is something I hope the Essentials line is going to help out with. Because, I mean, as we're playing through, you know, the whole point of us being here right now is that we're playing through a game of original Dungeons & Dragons. And, you know, I quickly learned in that game that exploration more than combat was huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can go miles, you know, tromping through the forest, discover treasure and caves and stuff like that. And if he rolls the dice for those random encounters and gets nothing every time, you know, we could explore the hell out of that forest and never kill a single thing, but still be playing Dungeons and Dragons and still be in the heart of the game.
Right.
You know, way different than just a straight dungeon crawl of, you know, if you walk into that room, you will find goblins. You must battle them, and I think what happens is that people miss out on a lot of that, and it's not something that's taught, and it's not really something that's learned very quickly, and so a lot of people have latched on to the idea that fourth edition is just combat, and that's where you get all the detractors who say Dungeons and Dragons fourth edition is nothing but combat, because that's all people know. They pick up modules, which I don't denigrate modules. I think they're great. I think they can be a lot of fun. But you pick up a module and you're going to get that idea because everything is unavoidable. You know, conflict is unavoidable. Right. Exploration has almost little to do with it because you're going through that door whether you like it or not, because that's, you know, the end is on the other side.
Right. Oh, well, yeah, it does have a tendency to railroad a little bit. And that's true.
You know, and not to beat a dead horse, but my fear is, and I am excited about the Essentials line.
Yeah.
What I really hope is that it brings a lot of new players in. You know, I spend a lot of time trying to get new players into the game. I mean, that's how I ended up with this Tuesday group, is just evangelizing the product and the game. But I fear all these new rules and these new subclasses and stuff like that. It's almost like it's teaching them a different game. Like I said before, people are going to come out of this Essentials experience and not be, they're going to jump into the regular game and be like, oh, I thought everybody was like this. And it's going to be like, no, only your character's like this. Everybody else has been playing it this way for a long time. Well, oh, I thought, you know, what I rolled this to do this. No, that's in Essentials, you know, your character did this, but everybody else has to do this. And so you either play one or two ways. The Essential guy keeps playing Essentials in your group, or he has to convert to the new system, which he isn't what he learned. So I'm just really hoping that The Essentials is less of its own game. And from what I understand is it runs from 1 to 30, so it almost feels like it's a standalone game. And more of a, this is a very basic introduction to the basic rules of a larger game, and the next step is play the larger game.
Yeah, it'll be hard to see. It'll be hard to see until I, you know, take a look at it.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
As far as the classes go, as long as the mechanics are as seamless as they are for the current game, I don't mind running them parallel. If you're telling me that your wizard is an essentials wizard and he doesn't have dailies, but his encounters, powers, or this or whatever, then I'm saying that's fine. Whatever. Let me see your character sheet. Let's move on. You know, I'm not. It's not a big hang up for me, at least on that part of it. Now, if there are whole other ways of doing things like monetary system or magic items or the monster builds are totally different in Essentials as they are in the regular rules, then I'm going to have more issues with it because it's like, okay, look, guys, orcs in Essentials are different than orcs here in this game, and why is that? You know, so... And if that's the case, then it means that they've balanced those monsters to face Essentials characters, and if that's the case, then you're now we're talking about a separate game.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, instead of just something that can like seamlessly dovetail into the other one. And then you get what you're saying, Thad, is that that's, you know.
Yeah.
It's
and I'm
really difficult.
I'm not predicting that, I'm just fearing that.
Yeah. Know? No, I think everyone has that nervousness, yeah.
My hope is that I am going to be completely wrong and that they're just going to release an amazing product here in the future. And my hope is that they will agree to send a representative in to talk to us and quell my fears.
That would be awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
If anyone at Wizards ever listens to us in our little conversations, you know, maybe they could put in a good word for getting us a rep for one of our little meetings.
Yeah, no kidding.
One thing that I think might be interesting about the lack of dailies is changing how... So dailies right now are a pretty big carrot to make players want to take an extended rest after every encounter.
This is true.
So I think I'm really curious if not having dailies anymore is going to help push players along so that they continue to explore or just keep going instead of saying, wait, are you sure there's no room I can hole up into for the next 20 hours? I really want to just relax again.
Well, the loss of dailies and the basically the extension on the workday, as it would be,
right,
almost makes me think that this is not just a marketing idea to get new players into the game, but it's also trying to reach some of those holdouts from second through, mm-hmm. you know, 3.5 edition, because one of the biggest gripes I've heard is, you know, daily powers make it so much like World of Warcraft and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it almost feels like Wizards has listened to their complaint and said, haha, look, now you can play 4th edition because you don't have to have dailies anymore. You know, come on back, 3.5, you'll love it.
Well, the funny thing is that with the extended numbers of encounters, powers, and no dailies, actually makes it closer to WoW. WoW never really had dailies. All the powers were on countdowns that were much shorter than that. And so, you know, now it's even closer to that. That's what my fear is, actually just the opposite. Like, oh man, now you've made it even more like WoW, you know. And I don't see that. And I mean, and you, to go back to a point you made earlier about modules and stuff, it's like, yeah, they seem to be pretty encounter focused, but the pieces are there to be able to do. It never stopped me from doing any art role playing. I mean, we role played the entrance into Winterhaven, and you know, and everything that went on in Winterhaven, and all that kind of stuff. And it without any kind of, you know, there were a couple of sessions that's been nothing but talk because you had to get from one place to another, and the only way you could do that is actually role play. So
right, in my group, it's that they don't like role playing in modules because they feel that whatever happens there isn't going to really affect the story. So all I do is I just don't tell them we're playing something somebody else wrote. And it's much better.
More lies from behind the screen.
Hey, hopefully none of them will listen.
The story I have about that is when 3.0 first came out back in like 2000, we first started the Dead Orc Society. I was looking for material because I wanted to try to run a quasi sandbox, but didn't want to have to make all this crap up on my own with a brand new set of rules, which were so different than 2.0. So I'm looking through some of the old material, and I'm finding stuff in Dragon Magazine. I'm finding these little introductory modules here and there and on the website, and I cobbled this all together and put it in my own campaign setting, but I never told any of them where I found this stuff. But it was all stuff that had been created by someone else. And that's a very, you know, valid way of doing it, is like just steal and you know, fit it into your own, you know, shoehorn it into your own campaign setting, and usually they're none the wiser.
So, yes.
Well, and I, you know, like I said before, I don't denigrate the modules. I have used them before. I just think an experienced DM and a new DM are going to approach them very different. And I think an experienced DM can really draw out the role play, you know, as you did, where you can have entire sessions where it's all role play. I fear new DMs who, you know, just can't trudge through all of the bookwork to make their own world and, you know, don't have that commitment will go to a module, and the next thing you know, it's just, you know, encounter after room encounter after room encounter, which is...
Well, it's not even just commitment, it's lack of knowledge.
Well, I'm saying the commitment is, you know, as a new DM, you really have to sit down and tear those books apart and link, you know, okay, movement skills are back here and treasure parcels are in this book on this page. Okay, now, you know, I've learned about creating monsters for this level party and now I need to learn how to do this. I mean, there is a time commitment and just an effort commitment that you have to put into it to really, really master the game. You know, if you don't have that time or if you just can't make that commitment, then you may sit down with the module and turn it right into that, you know, all combat fourth edition that people kind of bag on all the time.
Right.
But a good DM can turn a module into, you know, months and months of amazing play with a lot of roleplay. I don't deny that at all.
Yeah, no. My players also know when I'm stealing from stuff, because I usually steal maps. And the rooms are just the wrong size anymore. So.
Nice trick.
Yeah.
So, Tracy, I noticed on Twitter you were talking with Chris Tulock and he had sent you an adventure?
It was the free RPG Day thing. I had gotten it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was very nice of him. And I ran the first half for a group. And that was what I was talking about the other day. And they really liked it. They like to change the pace. I'm really looking forward to Dark Sun coming out and playing it at Gen Con. I'm just a little concerned about playing a longer campaign in it still, but I think it's a really great change of pace. It's a little meaner.
There were a lot of people who were bothered by our conversation the other week about Dark Sun.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
oh, that's interesting.
I didn't hear any of it, so.
Oh yeah, I caught some of it in the face on Twitter. Just people who, you know, I guess we failed to mention psionics, which, you know, my reply to that was I never really liked the way 4th edition did psionics. I don't have experience with them past 4th edition, but I don't really like them. They don't hold a lot of interest to me. So saying that they cover some, you know, some missed ground in Dark Sun, to me, is just saying, here's another room that you don't want to explore because it sucks.
Well, see, psionics to me they've been around since the first edition rules. They were an add-on. They were in the appendix of the first edition rules. And so they were always out there on the periphery. Dark Sun utilized them in a campaign setting, finally. But to me, that wasn't a big deal to me as part of the campaign setting. It was just another mechanic to sort of make up for the fact that there is no clerical magic and arcane magic was now different.
Yeah.
And to me, it was like, oh, okay, so it's another kind of magic. And we got really frustrated in the second edition rules because they like rehashed those psionics rules like three different times. You know, and it was like, guys, come on. Is it PowerPoints? Is it not PowerPoints? Is it skill sets or is it not skill sets? You know, choose what you're going to do. And as far as Dark Sun being that incorporated into that, it's like, okay, fine. To me, Dark Sun was about the environment.
Yeah.
This was one of the first places where it was literally man against nature. And that's what really captured it for me. I would like to see a Dark Sun type campaign setting for different kinds of environments like that.
Right.
Like an
right.
Arctic
right.
one, you know, well, or something like that.
Well, and we talked about on Twitter, you know, some of the people who disagreed with my point of view. It's not – I don't think Dark Sun is a bad campaign setting.
I don't
think that at all. I think a lot of people will have a lot of fun in that campaign setting. But I like – if I'm going to play in a broken world, I like my broken world to be, you know, more rain, less sun, you know, more city, less desert. I like – you know, more darkness, less daylight. I just like the kind of the darker broken worlds versus the, you know, you're going to, if you stay out too long, you're going to get a sunburn and that's going to take away healing surges. Well, I don't care about sunburns. I care about
seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. I live in, you know, I spent a lot of time living in Seattle and I live here in the Northwest. I like rain. I like forests, you know,
I was going to say,
My broken worlds just look different, and you know the whole idea of playing Dungeons and Dragons is it's kind of an escape fantasy. You get to go to the world where you're going to have fun, and Athas just isn't the place where I'm going to have fun. Lots of people can, tons of people are excited about, you know, this campaign setting, which means it's probably a really good campaign setting, just not the one I would like to play in. And
yeah,
just
I'm still waiting for the ocean based campaign setting.
See, that would be.
Where all overland movement is by boat, you know, and canals, and there's like small islands, and you got lots of pirate activity and all that kind of stuff.
Kevin Costner has gills and
absolutely,
you know, lives out on
elves to the max.
Yeah, no, I mean, see, that sounds interesting and kind of fun to me. As long as sunburn isn't a hazard, you know.
That's right.
anyway, yeah. I mean, I'm not the end all be all. Authority on all things cool, and just because I don't like to play in a desert doesn't mean that it's not a good idea to have it.
Athas isn't a historically, you know, there's a historical precedent for re-releasing it, so you know,
yeah.
Cool campaign setting when it first came out. The nice thing about, I was looking through my box set that I, you know, and I have the second edition box set, and it came with, you know, pre-generated characters. It came with little card stock triangle things that you could sit on the desk and for stats and stuff and tables, and you know, had a couple of different guides in it, and it had a short story in it. You know, it was actually a very, very well done box set, and you know, for the second edition. So I mean, you're going to miss out on some of that kind of thing for this because they'll release it. I think they're releasing it as a book, right? So,
right.
Yeah.
You know, but still, I mean, it's not – I could see the historical precedent there. I mean, I think that – I actually think 3.5, at least as far as special environments, 3.5 came closer when they did – when they released stuff like Frostfell and Stormwrack and they did a desert one as well, and I can't remember what it was called. But gave you environment books that showed, you know, the harsh kind of environment that you could DM in.
Right. Well,
I'm looking forward to the fairy tale setting.
Are you being facetious, or is there really one of those coming?
Isn't that Dragon?
I don't know if it's actually coming, but
isn't that called Dragonlance? Like you ride around on dragons and.
I don't know. I want my Greco-Roman myth and. Some dryads, some nymphs, you know, stuff like that.
Well, hey, nymphs came back in a big way with the Monster Manual 3.
Oh yeah, they're back. Just
that's right.
There's not a lot of settings or pre-written adventures that have that sort of bent, turning old fairy tales on their head. Not at least from Wizards in 4th edition.
Well, there are so many campaign settings that had been released in earlier editions, and there are a lot of people calling for new campaign editions. You know, or new campaign setting ideas, new world ideas, I guess, to be released. For someone who's brand new to the game, I would love to see a lot of the. I went on Wikipedia and looked up just tons of different games that, like, what was it? Hollow World?
Yeah.
It's like Dungeons and Dragons, but there's this world in the center of the planet, and, you know, I don't know, it looked cool. It had pictures of elves riding shields as sleds. It looked like a lot of fun to me.
That is pretty cool.
So I don't know. I don't know where I sit on that that idea. What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, I think on the like, you know, this new Dresden Files that's coming out, which congrats on the pickup for that.
Thanks. Oh, yeah. I am stoked about that.
I'm actually going to steal. I want to steal the setting. I mean, for Dungeons and Dragons, forget your mechanics. You know, although if this is being broadcast, I mean, all respect to the Dresden File guys. I mean, I think it's an awesome effort. I just, you know, I want to steal the setting because I've been watching the series now, and it's like, wow, you know, this is really cool.
Yeah. Well, and to be honest, my weekly ritualistically speaking blog posts have kind of come out of my new love affair with the Dresden Files and just kind of bringing that, you know, that kind of interactive magic into the game more than just shooting a fireball at somebody's face.
Exactly. Yeah. And I like the idea of a group of investigators, and you can do some of that in Eberron.
Right.
But I'd love to see it's basically, you know, a modern take on, you know, it's like D20 modern, except it's not D20 anymore. It's 4E, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, and there's a lot from the Dresden Files you can learn and carry over to Dungeons & Dragons that I think would make it a superb game. Like, the city, I mean, hell, I'll go off on Dresden Files for a little while because it's a fun game and entertaining. In the game, the world building in the game actually is done in a session with the whole group. So the whole group sits down and decides, where's our setting? Are we in New York? Are we in Portland? Where are we? And so the whole group decides that, and then the group starts deciding on hotspots. There's a bar that vampires are kind of using as a base, and they're turning people into vampires, you know, in this bar. There's also, you know, another hotspot would be a church, and that's kind of a place of refuge. Or there's a city mafia kind of running out of an old warehouse or something like that. So the whole group gets together and starts listing all these hotspots in the cities. And then they start making up the NPCs who inhabit those hotspots. Because the whole idea is that the players inhabit this city or this area where the game's going to be played. And they know about it. They know small details about it. They don't know exactly what's going on. And that's where the GM comes in and kind of starts to control the action and creates the finer points of the plot. But everyone in the group is privy to some information. And some players make up, there are these little NPC like hotspot character cards. Some players will make up one and the other players won't help with it. So it's like that player's character has a little bit of information about this guy, and so the group can tap him later if they come up against this guy. Sally creates this mob boss that most of the other players in the group don't know about. And so if they're up against the mob boss, she can be like, oh, you know, I know something about this guy. He usually deals out of the back of this club, or he's got this henchman that we can talk to get in. I really think that I'm going to incorporate that into Dungeons & Dragons because I hate the idea of, and it's one of the reasons I use published campaign settings versus my own homebrew world. I feel like when I have to do a homebrew, all of the players start the game fresh off the boat, like they've just come from some other world and they know nothing about the world where they've come from, and they have to keep asking me questions.
See, when I started my 3.0 campaign and I was using my own homebrew world, which was actually grew out of stuff I'd been working on 10 years previous to that. I mean, literally 20 years in the making, guys. I actually had material that I handed out at the very first meet and greet. This is back in 2000. And I was like, guys, I want you to read this, and I want you to familiarize yourself with it before we even start creating characters, because this is the world you'll be campaigning in. Because it had a different, I mean, there were only 10 months in the year, and they were 40-day months, or 42-day months, one or the other. And the world actually didn't go around the sun directly, but it went around a gas giant that went around the sun, okay? So it was more like a moon. So there were some things that they had to get used to that were different than maybe the typical campaign setting. But yeah, you have to – that's a lot of prep work though. And obviously – and then going all the way back to Tracy's argument, you know, new DMs, that's hard for them to do. How do you build something – you know, if I tell you that it took me – 20 years of various ideas coming together before I could finally give my players something that I thought was halfway decent as far as a homebrew campaign world, then that's going to really be intimidating to a new DM. There's got to be a better strategy. And I'm not sure what the answer to that is, but...
Well, I think for some groups, it'll be the community-built world where...
Right, and I think you're maybe right,
Go, Tracy. You've been waiting in the wings.
The other thing I'll say about the community-built world, for a lot of new players, particularly people who've been around D&D a little bit, they know that the story is very important, and the DM gets to set the story. And so they're so afraid of doing things that are going to break that story. I mean, not all players are like this, but I know I was, and I've heard other people say it too. And so they're afraid of doing any of that exploration or trying stuff out that I think a lot of DMs would actually like their players to do.
Yeah.
And if they build that world together, they've all bought into it. So probability of snarky comments goes down a little bit. And the DM doesn't have to worry quite so much, like, am I creating something that these guys are actually going to care about?
Right.
At the end of the day. And on top of it, they've bought into that world, so they feel like it's as much their world as it is the DM's or the guy across the table or the guy next to them's world.
Yeah, and that's huge, because I downloaded newbie DM's little player survey sheets, and I had my guys fill it out. And so when you're doing your own world, it's nice to have that information of what are these guys looking for, and hopefully when I build my world, it'll contain a little bit of things that each person's interested in. But when they sit down and they all flesh it out together, then you know it's got something that interests them, because everybody's added a little piece to themselves. And moving past just the world generation, the character creation for this game, it uses these things called aspects, which are basically boiled down one-liners from stories you have to write about your character. It asks you to write a story about, you know, one time that you interacted with someone in the city. And so what that's doing is it basically forces you to make someone in the city that you have a relationship and that you care about. And so, again, unlike a D&D character, and I think we talked about this a little while ago, I think the last time we got together, a lot of players do the I'm an orphan, or I have no memories, or, you know, I'm traveling from a distant land. They have no connections to the people in the game. So it's hard to draw people they care about into the game because they don't care about anybody. And so this game it requires you to create ties to the city so that when you're messing with one of the bad guys, you are also thinking, okay, one of the people my character's tied to is his mom, and these guys know who I am. It's not like I have a secret identity. So if I mess with them, there's a chance they're going to mess with my mom. So there's, there's always that consequence, that action and reaction. And you have to think about what you're doing and maybe think twice and maybe take a different course of action. Or let some things slide that you normally wouldn't let slide. Whereas in D&D, it's just like the only way that 90% of the people I've ever played with have been neutral or unaligned. And the only way you can really get to them is, you can't kill townspeople because unaligned people are just like, well, they were just townspeople. They didn't have anything to do with me. The only way you can get to the character is by attacking them directly. And in this really just intense character creation process that they take you through in this game, you are tied to the world in more ways than just the fact that you helped create it. Now your character has relationships that you were forced to make, and you can't get into the game without having relationships with people, which makes it even more fun and also realistic.
See, now I forced a lot of, when we started our 4E campaign, when I set the guys down, I said, I paired them off. I go, pick someone else in the room, pair off. You guys know each other. Tell me how.
Right.
And I had to incorporate, and I made them incorporate that into their backgrounds. And so it kind of prevented them from saying, well, I'm a long lost so-and-so, or I've been traveling the world for years and years and years, or that kind of thing, because they all knew someone else and that had to be, related. And since they were all different races, I avoided, and I didn't do that on purpose, they just all picked different races. But I avoided the, well, we're brothers, or, we're married, or the whole kind, that pairing, that other real world type of pairings up, it avoided that kind of stuff. So the relationships they had to make had to do with friendships, and those mean being in specific areas. So, it was, that worked out very well. And I'm hoping that some kind of, something on as a collaborative nature has to almost be included in a DM guide to say, look, get your players to do this, because it's the only way to get them used to the idea of where they're at, regardless of the campaign setting.
Right. And I love that idea, and I like the idea of taking it a little further and not only requiring them to have some kind of relationship with each other, but also have some kind of anchor as an NPC, and they get to create the NPC. It's like, who are you creating? Oh, I'm creating, the guy who taught me how to be a wizard, and he's this elderly wizard guy, and he lives, somewhere in the city. Maybe he runs the magic shop. And if my players were to do that, they were to be like, okay, so the guy who runs this magic shop got me my start in becoming a wizard. I'd be like, great, you just created yourself a wonderful link with someone in this game. You know, if he's in trouble, that's going to affect you. But also what it's going to do is you'll get a 15% discount every time you go into that magic store.
That's
so there's
cool.
Yeah, there's way more to it than just like, oh, you've created this relationship, so now I've got you, you know, I've got a way to pull at your heartstrings, and that's all you get out of it. No, there's definitely reasons why you have relationships with people in the game. Maybe they'll help you when you're failing at a skill challenge to impress the king, and they'll come in and basically intercede on your behalf and just be like, you know, we raised him, or he's my cousin, or he's been helping me out at the church for all these years. Whatever your connection to them is, you know, maybe I'll bring them in at a really integral part of the game, and they'll be like, bam, here's a bonus to your diplomacy check. Or if you came from the Thieves Guild, they'll come and make a distraction when you're trying to do something, and there's a bonus to your bluff check or whatever. And so I'm thinking that these relationships that you would create for yourself in the game would be both a boon and a threat.
Right. And I think, so I've had DMs ask me to create NPCs and stuff before, but I think you really need to have both sides of that, the cooperative world building and this part where you're creating the connections between your character and the world to both happen in order for that to be a real possibility, at least for new players. Because I know when my DMs ask me to do that, I'm just like, well, I don't really know enough about your world to know what NPC is possible yet.
Right.
And so I mean, I know there are people out there who have like way more experience than me and are more confident when it comes to that. But I, like I said, when it comes to a lot of the D&D stuff, I'm really afraid of ruining the DM's story when I'm a player. And it's really funny because I know as a DM, I really don't care. I want them to ruin my story. In that way, like if they want to come up with something crazy and awesome, I'll just go with it. But I don't have the confidence yet as a player to just do that and to know the difference between a DM who's going to be okay with it and one that's not. So if it's in the rules or in that contract when you sit down and you start playing that this is how we're going to play, I think that really helps.
And
go ahead.
No, you go. I've been talking quite a bit tonight. So
well, what I was going to Tracy, you're right. I have a DM that we were playing an online game. Haven't played in a couple of months, but it was sort of a retooling of the Pathfinder one that we had. And so when our DM sat down and started building the wiki, he actually left the wiki open to his players so that we could add things to it periodically. And so one of the things he based his stuff on, and in building his world, was, you know, all of us in the group were fairly creative people and decent writers and stuff, so our character backgrounds spoke a lot of what he could do, and he worked with those backgrounds. He didn't, if there was something that looked like it might be world breaking, he changed it. But then there were some things that I was writing about that he said, oh yeah, I need to create a section on that now, you know, in the wiki. And so that was what the DM, he was very open to that kind of, you know, collaborative type effort. As for finding out who will want to do that and who won't, I would just ask them. If you come up with a new DM, I literally say, look, I'm going to write a story. I usually do my character backgrounds in the form of a short story. I said, if there are elements in the story that don't jibe, let me know and I can do a rewrite. And that's how I usually approach it with a DM. I mean, you've seen some of my blog posts. I've posted my character backgrounds before.
Yeah. Well, you're sadly, your dwarf background was pretty good, but
it was actually brief. Well, I was actually short compared to a lot of them. But if you've looked at any of my
so was his life. So
yeah, that's true.
It was fitting.
Short and glorious. And I haven't written anything yet for Chaz Standish, Fighting Man.
Oh, I am so excited to play with him. It's going to be so awesome. I'm going to steal everything he owns. It's going to be great.
Nice. What I ended up doing.
He must have needed it worse than I did.
That's why I love Chaz.
That's right.
What I ended up doing was actually carving out my own areas where I could have pretty much total control. Like, I would write letters home to her parents, to Sarah's parents, saying, like, what's going on and what I thought about it and stuff like that, just because, then I could have a little control.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's funny to hear you guys say that because, I mean, just that it's you don't want to step on toes and you make sure that you don't try to alter the main story, because my players do a weekly recap every time. And I actually, you know, whoever writes it, they all race to finish the recap because I give them experience for it. And so you know, I'm bribing them, but it works so well because they're all so creative the way they write the stories. And one of my players wrote the recap from the point of view of one of the main NPCs who has like a huge role in the current story. And he was just like, here, I wrote it from his standpoint, and, you know, this is what he's thinking and this is what he's going through. And he just handed it to me like, this is how it is. And I was like, you know what? That's awesome. And it was beautifully written, and it told the story so well. And it changed the story a little bit because now I'm, you know, kind of going to play the NPC more the way this guy wrote him. But I think, you know, I think it's awesome when players take a little initiative and buy into the world a little bit and change it, because now they've written how this guy views them as a party, even though it might not have been in the past. And, right, you know, he's altered the world, and it's the world he wants to play in. And so I'm going to let him keep playing in it.
Yeah, I wish mine would do that. It's like, yeah, they come here every month, and they enjoy playing when they play, but there's just no outside game engagement, unfortunately. So,
not
near as much as I'd like. So
yeah, we wave all week, and you know, with all the projects I have going on in school and work, sometimes I don't get on it as often as they do, and sometimes they poke me. You know, they'll be on there like, hey man, we're still waiting to find out what happens here. Come on, what's going on? So I love my players. I think I've got like a dream group. And they're all willing to play Dresden Files. So we're going to do that, you know, start out trying it, build a city, build some characters, and then maybe try a game or two and maybe go to once a month. So I'm stoked. I am stoked about my party. I kind of went about enticing them to play in a fashion of like, I took a couple guys out to beer to get beers one-on-one, you know, so I could kind of get them on my side. Like, this is why the game's fun. I think you'll have a lot of fun with it. Let's try this out. And so, you know, they started buying into it one by one. And I have one guy who, you know, I think he really loves playing in the group, but he was really committed to playing Dungeons & Dragons. That's like his number one game. And I don't think he's really all that big on trying anything else. And so I think he was being a little facetious when he sent me a little message like, you know, I want to play D&D, and I don't know anything about this new game, but, you know, I'll try it out as long as I can be a werewolf bus driver. And the awesome thing is, there's no...
I love the idea of a werewolf bus driver. That's
yeah,
awesome.
There's no character classes. There are concepts and templates, but you can build whatever you want. And so, like, as he's still typing this in Wave, I'm just like, you can definitely be a werewolf bus driver. And so if that's your only holdout, you know, we're playing this game because you're going to be a werewolf bus driver. So, you know, it's since the Dresden Files is so rules light, you know, it definitely doesn't run off mechanics like Dungeons & Dragons does. You can basically do whatever you want. You know, one guy was like, I want to be a guy who investigates crime scenes by sleeping on them and basically having psychic visions about what happened. And I'm like, yeah, you can totally do that. We'll just give you these powers and add this together, and there you go. Your guy can do that now. So, you know, it's almost has that reskin ability that 4th edition has, you know, that you can
Let me ask you this. I mean, Dresden Files is an expensive RPG. Each
yes.
Each is like, what, $50? $50, right?
Unless you buy the PDF version, which is available and much cheaper.
Right. Okay. If it's rules light, what are you getting for that $50? I mean, I don't want to. I'm not knocking the campaign setting, and they deserve to be paid what they think it's the item's worth. That's cool, but what am I getting for that $50?
You are getting basically the core fate mechanics wrapped around Dresden Files, but it's basically teaching you how to build a city and tell a story in the way inside the rules of the game. I mean, there are rules. Definitely are rules. There aren't enough rules to require a DDI subscription and constant errata updates. And I mean, you're getting a large stack of character templates and powers that you use in the game. Large amount of it's kind of hard to explain, but especially since I'm still reading through it and so new to the game.
Right.
Magic in the game is conceptual. You know, you have to figure out how your character's magic works. And there are rules for how magic works, but you figure out the flavor text for all that stuff.
Okay.
And so there is a lot of information about how you have to come up with your own rules. So there are rules for making your own rules, basically. Instead of like 4th edition, where there's just a list of rituals in the back, there is, you know, I'm looking at like 30 pages right now about thermatology, which is basically ritual spell casting, and it's how to make it all work. How do you make divination work? How do you make conjuration work? You know, you can conjure things. Who was it? Was it Mylenbus was talking about? No, someone was, I think it was Mylenbus who played in a Dresden Files game the other day, and he had a conjurer who spent a lot of time conjuring a spell, and the final result of the spell was he made an anvil fall from the sky on the bad guy they were fighting. And it took him, you know, it took him a while to do that. And that's not a spell in the game. There's no conjure an anvil spell, but there is a page and a half on how to make a conjuration spell, how to make your own spell, and what your bonuses would be for that, what you would have to roll. There's summoning and binding. There's a page and a half on backlash and fallout, because the whole idea is you make this magic. It's very personal how it works for you, but that also means that since there's no it always is done this way, the spell you create may backlash. You know, you may get hurt from it. Or there may be fallout, which means that it's more powerful than you expected, and it not only hurts the person that you wanted to hurt, but it hurts people who are around you as well.
Right.
And so that's just the magic stuff. So I'm still 30, 40 pages. And then it talks about magical implements. There's 5 or 6 pages right here of ideas for magical implements, but then it's goes on to like a 10 or 11 more pages of how do you make a magical implement for your character, what works for them, what doesn't, how do you, you know, your bonuses, all that kind of stuff.
So some of the stuff people have been kind of asking for lately on Twitter, like in regards to how to create magic items in D&D and stuff like that.
Right, right. And then a good portion of the book is the very basics of this city called Nevermore or Baltimore. Which is there, they've gone through the entire creation process for a city and characters, and basically it's, as I've been going through and doing a mock-up of how to write a city and how to write characters, it's been great because I can go and look at they have these pseudo-filled-out sheets that look exactly the same as what you would fill out if you use the sheet in the back of the book or if you downloaded it. And so I can look at this and say, did I write this out right? You know, is my summation of this aspect right? And then you can go and look at it and be like, okay, yeah, I got close. Or, oh man, I was really not writing anything close to what they were talking about. Yeah, and so that's just the core rule book. You don't even need the second book, which is the kind of the less expensive of the two. But the second book is basically, it's your story is the first book, and that's basically how to create your own city, how to play the game completely. And Our World is basically just a world-setting book that has all of the Dresden File characters in it from the series. So if you wanted to use the characters that have already been written by Jim Butcher, then you buy that second book.
So, oh, I see. So the main book is really the only one you really need.
$50 and you can play this game, and you don't even – the honest truth is you don't even need to buy the second book, because you could stat out all the NPCs from Jim Butcher's books if you wanted to put the time into it, and you wouldn't even need to buy the second book. I bought the second book because it's really more of a complete guide to the Dresden Files up to a certain number of books. It's got, you know, tons of backstory on all these characters and where their powers come from and what they've been through. And so it's really more of a compendium to just the Dresden Files for me. So I figured they had an extra one at the store. Why not get it?
Cool. All right.
So, but yeah, $50 will get you the whole game.
It may be worth it just to see the contrast every now and then, just to be able to look at how another game, how other game rules, you know, solve certain problems.
Right.
Can give you insight into the current game that you're playing, and
there. Definitely when I'm reading through this, I'm looking at it and saying, oh man, you know, there's a lot that the players are going to be either wanting to do, and I'm just going to have to say no because there's no solid rule for it and I don't want it to happen. And they're going to say, where is it? And I'm just going to say, it's not in there. Which is, you know, it's that I like resting on that in Dungeons & Dragons, being like, oh, well, you can't do that because, look, you can't move around this corner because the movement rules say, you know, you have to go like this or whatever. There's just a lot of rules that you can rest on and not have to basically tell your players no or yes just because you want it to happen or you don't want it to happen. That's, you know, that's where a lot of resentment comes from, I think.
From the DM fiat thing.
Yeah. And so, and the DM fiat is huge in this game. But yeah, Dungeons & Dragons has been the only role-playing game I've ever played. It's it's amazing to me to look at another game system and just think about how different it would be to play, and I'm really excited to get to do it. Yeah. So
cool. Well, you'll have to keep us informed on how it goes. So
definitely.
Are you blogging about it?
There will be small blogs about it. I mean, my site is still mostly about Dungeons and Dragons, but
sure.
I will do a few small posts here and there about it, just because, I mean, I'm going to try games over my lifetime. I'm going to try more and more, and I definitely don't want to leave that information out. So.
Well, I haven't played very many. I mean, I've played a smattering of several once and then never went back. But there are some I've played more than once. Like, I played Deadlands for a while, the original Deadlands, and I liked it a lot. I've played Star Frontiers, Traveler, played... I've played some that I've like forgotten the names of. Because they were been around like way back. I think I played RuneQuest one time.
I want to try... There's a Hero System? Is it? Have you ever...
I'm trying to think. Is there a, is that the name of the camp? Is that just the name of a system, or is that the name of a game that uses the system?
I think that's the name of the game. Is it's just Hero System. Hold on. I'm looking for it. So I'm guessing that...
Superheroes, I probably haven't played it, because that's one genre I'm just not that interested in.
No, it's just called 5th Edition Hero System.
No, I guess I haven't done that one.
Yeah, I haven't played many games... Chatty got me to actually play some board games and card games at PAX East, which was quite an accomplishment for him, because I just don't do it. but I'm actually really interested in the Dresden Files. I think that's what I'm going to pick up at Gen Con when I'm out there, if they're selling copies of it, because I've heard really great things about it, and I really want to dive into those mechanics and see what I can pull out for the types of games that I want to play. And I may play Dresden Files too. I just don't know enough about any of it to know for sure. That's something that I'm really interested in.
Yeah, see, I'm looking to skin it for 4E and as a modern equivalent to a 4E game with magic. You know, not a D20 modern where there's no magic and it's just like more or less, you know, from modern times to sci-fi, but an actual magic using modern society. You start getting into the, you know, the Piers Anthony type of fiction and stuff there, and that can be interesting, but it can go over the top, so you have to be very careful, you know. But that's why I want to see how they handle it. So
yeah, well, I'm definitely interested in hearing about that if you're able to do that, and you know, if you want to turn it into an online game, let me know, because that would be a game right up my alley right there.
I would be up for that. I have to figure out time to do it.
Yeah, you and me both, buddy.
Yeah, that would be the hard part. But
ever since I read the book this weekend where the dragon was an investment banker, I kind of want to do a modern fantasy game with magic and everything like that.
Yeah, well, that, you know, if Fellowship of the Tweets ever, you know, kind of disbands or peters out, we'll definitely, I would run a Dresden Files game for you guys if you want.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
What was the name of that book? That sounded really interesting.
Black Blade Blues was the name of the book. It's
okay.
It's more of a fun read than, you know, some of the other fantasy books I've read. It talks about the SCA a lot and things like that. But I found it really, really fun. And
so what's the basic story of the game?
Of the book?
Yeah, the book, yeah. Everything's the game. Should be, anyway.
Basically, there's this woman who's a blacksmith and a prop master for a low-budget film, and she has this sword that breaks, and she gets visited by a dwarf who's 6 foot tall because it's based on Norse mythology instead of what we normally consider dwarves. And
Tolkien philosophy.
Yeah, Tolkien philosophy. Yeah. She has to reforge the blade and take her spot basically as a dragon slayer. But she fights against it the whole time, and on top of it, she's fighting herself because it turns out she's a lesbian and doesn't want to admit that publicly yet. So it's both the story of her, you know, fighting this whole, wait, we live in modern times, there's no such thing as dragons and magic, And then also just, you know, the more modern thoughts with gender and sexual identity and stuff like that.
Wow.
Okay, so Black Blade Blues?
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to go pick that one up.
I have to take a look. I wish I had more time to read.
I wish I had more time to everything.
I know, I was reading it and I was like, I don't want to put this down, but man, my house is a mess and I have a game to plan and blog posts to write. And I just read it anyway.
And holidays are always rough. Like, these next couple weeks are going to be terrible for me because I'm not a vacationer. Like, you know, I don't just run off to California or Hawaii or whatever. I did that when I was younger, but now I work because I'm just like, oh man, if I pay these bills, it'll be great. If I can get school paid off, awesome. And, you know, I'm saving my vacation time for cons. You know, I'm going to be going to PAX and I'll spend like a week in Seattle visiting some of my old friends. So I'm the guy who gets to hold down the fort while everybody goes on vacation and takes, you know, 4-day weekends and runs off to the lake. And so, you know, 2 weeks ago I would work one double shift every week. So that way I could have one extra day off. And so I'd still do five shifts every week. Two of those shifts were done in one day. And this week I have one day off and I'm doing two double shifts. And it's going to be that way for a while. So I'm doing, you know, eight shifts in 6 days with my one day off. And I'm just like, well, now I can't game. And I have to do all the house cleaning and, you know, all of my errands and get ready to go back to school at the end of summer with my one day off. And record two podcasts and, you know, keep writing three posts a week on a blog and, you know...
It keeps you pretty busy.
Yeah, there's no way I'm ever going to catch up with Sarah Dark Magic on Twitter if I'm spending this much time at work. So,
oh man, not to diverge here too much, but I was totally had a moment of geek rage this morning.
Oh really?
I booted up the PC at the office, and corporate had blocked both Facebook and Twitter.
Ah.
And I'm like, I like freaked out. It was like, holy crap! Why did you guys do this? And I could, of course, can't say anything because it's like, you know, I have no real business purpose for using either one of those items. And so, you know, I was kind of just sort of stewing in my own nerd rage there. And then, like, I mentioned it in a meeting with another IT person who I was in earlier and just kind of joking around with it and stuff. And then about half hour later, they had taken them off taken the block off of them.
Nice.
So I'm like,
nice.
I don't know who overheard the conversation. It's probably just a coincidence, but someone screwed up somewhere, and it's like they were back, and it's just like, oh good, I have my Twitter back. You know, so it's like, got to keep my eye on what's going on.
you cripple the nerds in your business, and you could really cut your left foot off doing that. So
see, well, and I work for an old company that is very conservative, and they're just now doing anything at all with social networking and stuff, and they don't really get it. I think they're kind of doing it because it's the thing to do, but they don't really get it.
Right.
You know? There's no intuitive sense about what it could be used for.
There's no vision for it. They're just keeping up with the Joneses.
No, they're just exactly, you know. So I mean, it's a good company, we make an excellent product, but they're real conservative.
Yeah. So. Well, my girlfriend's going to be home soon. I'd like to make some dinner or something for her. So,
well, it was excellent. I'm glad we all got a chance to chat again tonight.
Yeah.
Anyone, no one recorded this evening, correct?
I did.
You did. Okay, good.
Yeah. So there's a good chance that we will be up on iTunes again. DM Samuel actually created the account for uploading to iTunes, so I'm going to have to get that info from him, and he's off spelunking in a mountain somewhere from what I understand.